Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining me once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, last week I mentioned that my son Chase and I had just finished a 3-day intensive training on intervention. After the show, I received requests asking how to get more information about the training. Well, you can go to i911events.com for information on all of their upcoming events, or go to the Answers for the Family site and listen to my interview with Ken Seeley and Eric McLaughlin. I highly recommend that you do both. Now, our topic today is about parenting. Although some who have read her latest book would call it The Hilarious Truth About Motherhood. Our guest, Betsy Chassie, is an internationally known award-winning filmmaker and author, most notable as the co-writer, director, and producer of What the Bleep Do We Know? In 2014, she produced the acclaimed Song of the New Earth that premiered at the Seattle International Film Festival. Betsy has authored 4 books, including What the Bleep Do We Know, Discovering the Endless Possibilities to Altering Your Everyday Reality, and Tipping Sacred Cows. She is currently in production on a new feature documentary about the coaching industry, featuring Jack Canfield, John Gray, and Marcy Shimoff. And her new book, It Came Out of My Vagina, Now What?, has just been released in December. Betsy, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to have you on. And when I went on your site and I was realizing that I think we have a kinship already in the sense that you're another person that's wearing many, many hats while at the same time being a mom or being a parent. I imagine it's quite a juggle, huh?
You know, it is quite a juggle. I don't like to look at it as being quite a juggle, though, because that sort of frames it up as to being something that's precarious and hard and will fall apart at any minute. Like, because I actually can juggle balls. It's really a random ability that I have. And, you know, I like to look at it as that I've created a really full, fun, and adventurous life that's never boring.
Which is a great way to look at it. And yeah, and to me, I mean, for many people, juggling is fun, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative at all. Well, now I'm sure that a question that you must get a lot is, how did you come up with the title of the book?
It's funny, of course, everyone says that because I have this knack for titles, you know, What the Bleep Do We Know, Tipping Sacred Cows, and this new one. I have some other fun projects that'll hopefully come along, and they've got great titles. You know, it started with, you know, a big part of my life is spent talking about what it means to be spiritual, you know, the sort of new age spiritual movement. And people always asked me, well, how did you end up on the spiritual path? And my philosophy has always just kind of been, we don't get on any spiritual path, we are born. And so I would just always say, well, I came out of a vagina and it started, you know, it's sort of like this crazy event. I like popped out and here we go. Woohoo. And I was sitting around with my co-author, Debbie Spector Weissman, who's a mom, she's a grandmother. And she's sort of we've been friends for over 20 years, and she's just kind of been like my mentor and what a person that I could call, you know, when I was about to lose my cookies over my kids. And we were joking one night And I had been asked to write a parenting book. And I said, well, what would we call it? And I said, we could just say it came out of my vagina, now what? Because what happens is babies, that's where they come from. And we were sort of joking that the word vagina, people freak out when you say it. Like, it's almost as if you just said a horrible cuss word. And we wanted to sort of make it fun, make it funny. And basically, this is kind of what happens. So that's how it all came about. That and a nice bottle of wine, too.
Well, it has certainly garnered a lot of attention. So if that was part of it, it worked because, you know, people are talking about it, which if, you know, it's one of those things, you can write the greatest book in the world, but if you don't get people talking about it, if you don't get eyeballs on it, people don't know. So it seems to have done its purpose.
Cool. Yeah, I think so. People seem to, I mean, everybody laughs when we talk, when we say it. And, you know, moms that I know, we all, you know, it's sort of like this weird taboo thing that, that people don't want to talk about. But when you say the title, they go, well, yeah, that is exactly how it happened. You're right.
Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, I had 2 C-sections, so I'm kind of cheating with the title, but still, close enough.
Well, one of the things you talk about in the book, you talk about conscious parenting.
Right.
So what is your definition of conscious parenting?
So first, I just want to say, you know, they put that on the cover, and I wasn't intending them to say a book on conscious parenting, because conscious parenting is a very specific type of parenting, and an aspect of that is kind of what we talk about in the book, which is that, you know, one of the things that I had to come to terms with was that I gave birth to individuals. And that they came in, it was really fascinating to me when I could look at my children now and remember them within the first 10 or 15 minutes of their lives. And you know what was fascinating is they told me so much about who they were in those 10 or 15 minutes of my getting to know them. It's who they are now in so many ways. And they're both extremely different. And while they might have certain characteristics and traits that are similar to me, the truth is that they're their own people. And when I, as a mom, can really honor them and honor that within them and listen more as opposed to trying to mold them, more guide them, that's to me a big part of what conscious parenting is really about, is about being able to listen to your kids, accept, love, and understand them for who they are, honor who they are, and then help try to guide them as opposed to creating a little mini you.
I couldn't agree more, and it's something that I've talked about and said often is that, you know, our children come out and they're wired a certain way, and we as parents have the ability and the obligation to help guide them to become more of who they really are, and we only have a certain amount of ability to be able to do that. On the other hand, we do have a large influence if it's directed towards screwing them up. So.
Right. Well, and you know, I mean, it's hard because so much of what we tried to, I just went and got into a situation with my son who, you know, I'm a big proponent of playing a musical instrument because I think it's just a really good skill for them to learn in terms of developing great brains, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, my son was playing the drums and he's actually quite good at it. And he came to a point where he just didn't want to do it anymore. And we had this sort of battle back and forth because I was like the mom, like, no, you have to do this, you have to do this. And the rule that I have with my kids is like, you know, I'm interested in hearing from you calmly, intelligently, you know, no storming, stomping temper tantrums, no slamming doors. But if, you know, if you disagree with me, then present a reasonable discussion. Let's talk about it intelligently. And it was really interesting because I got butted up right up against my sort of my parents' rules, which is you will do this because, and we had this sort of battle, and it was funny because here's this book coming out and I'm talking about listening to your kids, and in a way I was sort of not listening to my kid. And I had this moment with him where we had this whole discussion about quitting, you know, and giving up because it was getting hard, and I realized that he said to me something. He said, you know, Mom, I understand that you're – and he's 8, by the way. He's super smart. Mm-hmm. He said, Mom, I understand that you don't want me to give up because you want me to learn commitment and follow through and then – and all that. I get it. But I just don't really like playing drums right now, and that's really it. And so I'm willing to do other stuff, but I just don't want to do this. And this is a little guy who loves football
wow.
so much. it was pouring rain outside yesterday, and he's out in the rain practicing his moves. And I observed him, and I thought, no, you know what? I don't need to worry about him not giving up on something because it's hard. If he truly loves it, he'll do it. And that was that parenting moment where I had to step back and go, why am I wanting him to play drums? And I had to dig deep and go, you know what? It's because in my childhood I played an instrument, and now I'm trying to project my experience onto him. And that's where the conscious parenting comes in. That's where you have to step back and go, okay, wait a minute. I'm realizing now that I'm putting something on him that really doesn't have anything to do with him. And so I said, okay, we don't have to play drums. You know, it's that kind of right. That's essentially it.
Well, what speaks volumes is the fact that at 8 years old, he was already able to articulate that. So obviously your message has gotten through about being able to communicate why you either want, don't want, or whatever, you know. So, I mean, I think it's a beautiful story. I mean, if more parents would recognize the fact that if you've already pre-taught them to articulate that, I mean, you can't help but love that response.
Well, I think for me, I realized that the most important tool that I can give my children is emotional intelligence. They're mm-hmm. not taught that in school. And they're bombarded on a daily basis with information that's going to push up against their self-worth. And kids also go through a process where they're learning about emotions. They're learning how to interact with other people. Kids are mean to each other. You know, they're really rough, right?
Yep.
And so to be able to learn to understand how you feel, check in with how you feel, communicate clearly how you're feeling and why you're feeling that, and then to understand where that feeling is coming from. I mean, imagine, I didn't really learn that. I suck at it now, you know, and I'm 6 years old. And so I realized, like, if I could teach my kids that, I don't care what grades they get in school. I don't care about any of it. If they can enter into their adulthood understanding how to process emotions, understand how their brain and body works, understand how they attach meaning, and realize that just because, you know, somebody says something to them doesn't mean they have to respond or react in a certain way, that their emotional response is their choice, then I've done my job.
I couldn't agree more. And what you just described is exactly what should be a class in school. If they started a class and taught that would help these kids, and it would help all of us, but I mean especially the kids, it would help them so much in getting through the day-to-day issues that they may run into while at school with their friends, outside of school, when they're dealing with the type of things that now go on over the internet and such. So
right.
Yeah, I could not agree more.
There's a quick game that you can play with your kids, if you don't mind. I'll tell you. It's really great, and it's super simple, and we do it every morning and every night. And it was taught to me by some really great coaches. They're called Passion Provokers, and it's super simple. So every morning, I ask my kids to name to give me three feeling words about how they feel, and they can't just make them up. They have to take a moment, check in, and ask. And I say, so how are you feeling? You just woke up. What are you feeling about the day? And they can, and it's not good or bad. They don't get to say, oh, I feel good or I feel bad, because those really aren't feeling words. They really have to use at least the first four, like angry, sad, happy, or scared. You know, and then so once they can learn to identify one of those feelings or three of them, like I might go, I'm happy because today is like my son this morning. I'm happy today because today is computer day. You know, I'm scared today because we have a spelling test. And then they can begin to check in. The next step is to talk about their feelings. And what they start to learn is that, wow, I just described how I felt. My mom showed empathy. She didn't judge me for the way that I felt. She allowed me to express myself. And then we talked about, and I feel better. We do that in the morning. And we do that at night. And what it helps them learn from a very early age is how to communicate how they feel.
Yeah. I had something when the kids were very, very young, and I had it on the refrigerator, and it was a magnetic picture of about, I got to think of how many were there, maybe 30 or 40 different feelings. And it was a picture of a face that you would make when you were having that feeling. And then it would have the word underneath it. And then there was a little square And you could move that over to which one you were. So it was on the refrigerator, and I would ask the boys and go, so put it where you feel today, you know, or if they came home from school and they seemed a little bit down, you know, show me which one, you know, and they would put it on there, like, you know, coming home from kindergarten, you know. So, yeah, I completely agree. I love that. And it's just, as you said, it's one of the greatest things we can give to our children.
And, you know, it's cool, like, because the worst question we always ask our kids is, what did you do in school today? And they're like, I don't remember, right? But if I ask my son or my daughter at the end of the day, how did you feel about school today? They're more likely to be able to connect with that. You know, I felt great about school, and then they remember. I felt excited because, and then all of a sudden you start to get the details that you really wanted to get when you were asking, what did you do in school today?
Mm-hmm. So while we're talking about all of these wonderful parenting moments, what would you say is your best mommy moment?
Gosh, you know, I have so many. I had a really awesome mom moment the other day I'm going to share with you because my kids, you know, they're technologically savvy. Okay. I'm not one of those moms who bans my children from using technology. Both my kids actually have cell phones. I know. Oh my God. Right. My son is 8. He has a cell phone. I'm divorced. They, you know, they're allowed to call their dad whenever they want and they can communicate. You know, they don't sit on it. And I also don't do this whole, don't stare at your phone for 6 hours. You know, I let them decide what they want to do. And I'm pretty impressed with how they're well-rounded in what they get to do. But it was really cool. We were in the car and my son is doing a report on Albert Einstein. And we were talking about Albert Einstein and the school gave him this book to read. And it was like the worst book on Albert Einstein I've ever read in my life, by the way. I was like stunned that this is like educational. Because it like missed the Manhattan Project. It barely talked about the splitting of the atom. I mean, there were so many things that it missed. I was like, I can't believe this. Like, you know, this theory of relativity, you know. And I'm a little bit of a science geek. So I was talking to my son. And I said to him, I said, you know what? I want you to go up to your teacher tomorrow and tell your teacher that her butt's not touching that chair. And he's like, Mom, I cannot say that to my teacher. And I said, you totally can because his teacher's a science nerd too. Mm-hmm. And she'll laugh because basically, you know, nothing ever really touches because of electrons. And I was trying to explain it to him. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I went and I got the section of the bleep where the little boy in the movie explains how, you know, electrons have a force and don't touch each other. So he watched like 10 minutes of the movie, and him and my daughter got in there and they were watching this and they were like, what is this? Is this like that kid president? Who made this? Is this a magic school bus? And I said, no, I made that. And they both just were like, you made this? I'm like, yes. And they were like, wow, that is so cool. So that is like a recent mommy moment.
That I love that. I mean, I absolutely love that. And the fact that you know, not only are you teaching them, but then for them to have the realization that they're now looking at something that you made, that's phenomenal.
Well, because most of the time, you know, they think of my films as, I mean, they've seen most of them, but, you know, I have to admit, I don't harbor any fantasy that my kids are going to sit down and watch Song of the New Earth anytime soon. You know, I mean, it's an interesting movie and I think it's cool, but they're probably not that excited about it. But, you know, it was cool to finally have that they're finally hitting this age where, I mean, Max actually said afterwards, I want to sit down and watch the whole movie. And I said, well, we can totally do that, but maybe I'll just show you sections where these pieces come into play. Because, you know, we have a whole thing about the double slit experiment in there and Dr. Quantum's in there and, mm-hmm. But it was really cool because I think for me, you know, so often they look, you know, I'm always like, they'll tell you, like at the beginning of the book, there's quotes from my kids. And, you know, my daughter says that I say no all the time. And I think to myself, gosh, I don't say no very much. But in her mind, I must say no all the time. And, you know, there's always this like, I wonder if they'll ever think that I'm cool. As my daughter is hitting preteen, I'm definitely not cool, you know. Uh-huh. So this one moment of just having them look at me and realize like, wow, like this person is doing really neat stuff was for me just a really great moment.
Well, now you have to realize that now as they start to become teenagers, a giant needle comes out of the sky. And as parents, it sucks our brain out because we not only not become cool, but we don't become very smart either.
Right. I have sort of hit that road. I mean, it's funny sometimes when I'll say to my daughter or my son, you know, I was actually 8 once. And they're finally now, they get it. But in the beginning, I remember my saying that to my son one time and him looking at me like, you were? I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't pop out of the vagina at 40, Max. You know, I had to do what you're doing. Trust me, I've been down this road. So, you know, but I think what was really cool about this moment was that they kind of gave me this look like, wow, Mom, you actually kind of threw down there. That was cool. All right.
It was a cool moment. Exactly. Yeah.
No, I agree. That's one of the greatest moments. You know, and when I mentioned the thing about the giant needle, when my oldest boy was 5 years old, he was in the backyard and he was asking me, as five-year-olds do, a million questions. And I was firing off answers, you know, and so he'd ask me this and he'd ask me that. And he stopped and he went, wow, Dad, you know everything, don't you? And I immediately turned to my wife at the time and I said, go get the video camera quickly. And she said, what? I said, just get the video camera. So we kind of went through it again and I answered some more things and said, so, you know, what did you say? And he went, wow, Dad, you know everything. So anyway, so we got it on video and she looks at me afterwards and she said, why did you want that? And I said, well, when he's 15 years old and I know absolutely nothing,
you can remind
him. I want to be able to show him that there was a time that I knew a lot and maybe it's somewhere in the middle.
Right, so. Right. Well, you know, I think that it's funny with my daughter now because, you know, I always joke with her. I said to her the other day, I said, you know, because I tell them to question everything. You know, I tell them, mm-hmm. don't believe everything you read just because someone tells you. And they're like, even a teacher. I'm like, yeah, you know, you can take in the information, but you always should check your sources, research the data, find multiple sources with the same information. You don't have to be a scientist in your life. And I forgot one piece of that puzzle, which was to add on the sentence, except if it comes out of my mouth.
Yes, so, I know.
So, yeah, that's all right. I'm okay. I mean, they're used to me saying, I don't know. Like, they'll ask me some question now, and I'll be like, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. Why don't you go look it up? Why don't you go find out and tell me?
Yeah, exactly. So, going along to the opposite end of that spectrum, what would you say is your worst mommy moment?
Oh, gosh. I have one of those a day, at least. You know, the reason that I wrote this book with Debbie and I wrote this book was because being a parent is thankless and hard and there's no instruction manual. There's no, you know, and the instruction manuals that are out there are terrible. Like when I first had my first child, you know, I read every single book there was to read and I was petrified. I was literally petrified that I was going to screw up my children. And, you know, I had a daughter who from the day she was born did not sleep, like literally woke up every hour and did this for about 4 years. And sleep deprivation is rough on you, you know. You get cranky, you get frustrated, you get caught up in your shit, excuse my mouth, and you get frustrated and you snap and you lose it. And so part of the reason we wrote this book was to share a lot of moments where we made what most people would judge as bad parenting decisions. But in hindsight, the point is that my kids are great. They're alive. I'm pretty impressed that I haven't killed them yet. They still like me for the most part. And I make a mistake every single day. And, you know, recently, just the other day, we were in the grocery store and they were like just, you know, bouncing off the walls, hyperactive as ever. And I turned around and they did something, or my daughter pushed my son and he kind of tripped and fell or whatever. And I turn around in the grocery store and I'm like, are you f-ing kidding me? Like really loud. And they, of course, stopped immediately because, you know, I'm one of those moms too. Like, I have a bit of a potty mouth. My philosophy is that words aren't powerful. Your intention is powerful and you can use words in an appropriate space and time. And so they stopped immediately. And of course, everyone in the store stopped immediately and stared at me, right? And I had that moment of like, oh my gosh, everybody here thinks I'm a terrible mother. And I was really, but I was just tired and frustrated and didn't want to be in the grocery store and I lost my cool. You know, they'd been, like, you push your buttons. And so, you know, that was literally 48 hours ago. So, I mean, you know, I have a bad mommy moment every single day. And we share many of them in the book. I mean, Debbie talks about the time she left her kid in the car. You know, now she'd be arrested for that, right? You know? And the idea is that you have one, you have a bad mommy moment at least once a day, if not 20 times a day, or what other people might judge as bad mommy moments. The funny thing about that moment in the grocery store was that after I got over the, oh my God, everybody is staring me moment, I realized, you know what? My kids were not behaving. They were not, they weren't being what we, I have a rule. It's like that behavior is not appropriate here. You know, it's not that it's bad or good. It's just that you have to be conscious and aware of your surroundings, and running around the grocery store is not appropriate. Running around the park is, you know,
right.
I realized, but in that moment, both my kids stopped, got up, and they both realized, oh, we have pushed mom over the edge. She's now cussing. She's now cussing in public. It's time to stop. You know, and they did, right? So it depends on how you look at it. It could be a really horrible mommy moment, or it could be like, wow, she just completely stopped that right in its tracks, you know?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know, and again, it kind of goes to that point to where, you know, you communicated enough with them going into the situation to where they got it. They understood what that meant. So.
Right. Yeah. And you know, you just have to, I think that's the main theme of the book, is that I think about all the times, you know, I'm 46 and my mom had six kids and, you know, we're all pretty all right. You know, we're all pretty all right. And there have been times, you know, I have smacked my kid on the back of the head. I have spanked my kid a couple of times. I have done all sorts of things that in any book or any particular parenting style would be judged. And, you know, you if I just know my kids, and I know we know each other, and we have a foundation of love and respect and communication. And so I tell them all the time, you know, like, I might lose it on my daughter. I had got mad at my daughter yesterday for something, and I got frustrated because I was in the middle of something else, and I kind of snapped at her. And the most powerful thing that I can do is I went upstairs. She kind of stormed upstairs, and I walked upstairs to her, and I said, you know, I'm really sorry. I totally was frustrated about something else, and you were kind of coming at me, and I didn't feel as though you were respecting my space, because I work from home, and we have, you know, they have to respect my workspace. And I snapped at you, and I'm really sorry. And that's an important tool for parents to have, is the ability to acknowledge, like, whoa, I was wrong here. And that's hard for parents, but for me, I think it's great, because when my kids see that I can make a mistake and then come back and take responsibility for it, they learn to do it too. And they also learn they're safe to do it, you know?
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. And we're going to take a break. I want everybody to stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We will be back in 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Betsy Chassie, and we are talking about It Came Out of My Vagina, Now What? Now, Betsy, we were just talking a little bit about it, just in regards to parenting in general and advice and things like that. What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
You know, the best piece of advice that I was given actually wasn't was about raising kids, but it was sort of like something I've really taken on in all aspects of my life, which was that it's short-term, long-term. And, you know, we have this tendency to become really tunnel visioned into this exact moment right here and now, which is good because you're supposed to be in the now, right? But the other thing is that I have this question that I've been teaching my kids, which is that, you know, before they react or get upset or do something, they ask this question: in the light of all eternity, what will this matter? And so what that means to me is that, you know, if I'm in a moment with them where they want to do something and I'm just saying no for the sake of saying no, when I ask myself, you know, is this going to matter an hour from now? Is this going to matter 2 hours from now? Is this going to matter 2 years from now? I focus more on what are the long-term implications before I look at the short-term. And it makes a big difference, because more often than not, I find myself realizing, like on those days where I'm saying no a lot, when I check in with myself, I go, why do I keep, what is it that I'm saying no about? Is it because I don't want to be bothered? Is it bugging me right now? You know, what's it going to really matter if they do this or they do that? And oftentimes I find that most of the time it just doesn't matter, and I'm making it matter more because in that moment it might seem like it matters, whereas in the long term it really, really doesn't. And it goes the same for, like, you know, the drum playing. You know, in the short term I really thought it would be good for my son to play drums, but in the long term the impact was I was forcing him to do something he didn't want to do, which could have longer term impacts on him emotionally and, you know, whether or not he ever wants to play an instrument again, you know, all these things. Whereas the short term was, well, I want him to do this, you know. So it's sort of the long term and short term implications of your choice.
Well, yeah, and that's when you told that story, that's exactly what I thought of, was that, you know, if we force the drums on him and he really is interested in the guitar, is he going to not pick up the guitar because he knows that if he doesn't like it, that may be forced on him also?
Right, right. So again, it's a short-term, long-term goals, you know, and shoot, it's sort of like choosing your battles, you know, because there are times, and my kid, you know, I feel like I try to, when we do the morning check-in and the evening check-in, I get to go too, so we each have a turn. So I also let them know, like, you know, gosh, you guys, I'm really feeling a lot of anxiety because I have a big project that I have to do. And the other thing that gives them is the opportunity to hear me and to say, oh, Mom's working on a big project right now, and so if she's feeling a little short-tempered or testy or running around, I can not take that personally and realize what's going on with her. And so it also teaches them empathy, you know. So that's part of the short-term, long-term, is for me to step back and go, okay, I'm this way right now, which is why I'm responding this way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like it, too. Shoot, I may steal that one myself.
It works in all parts. And what's great about the practice, and again, it came from my friends who were coaches in the Leap movie, and you know, it's this daily checking in. It's about, you know, all relationships revolve around communication. And I think for me, I had to remind myself that it's not just communication with my boyfriend or my business partners or my friends. It's also the communication that I have with my kids. And so I needed to create an opportunity for us to communicate beyond the yes, no, can I have, no, you can't, don't do, why are you doing this, are you frigging kidding me, those things, you know?
Yes, I certainly do. Now, we have some listener questions that have come in. And again, I want to thank all those listeners that take the time to send something in. Usually I find that it's somebody who works in the middle of the day, so they email or instant message something in, sometimes the night before, the morning of. So anyway, here's one. And again, I thank them for sending it. This one reads, I believe young mothers have it much tougher than previous generations for many reasons. One important reason is the deterioration of extended family support, not having elders that provide advice and guidance, as well as siblings and cousins that serve as role models. My question is, how do you feel about this, and do you believe the value of family will ever reemerge?
So I was lucky that, you know, I had my mom around for a long time. She's since moved to Kansas. But I did have my mother around. And it's an interesting question. So I got hung up on the idea of reemerging. I would say that in my perspective, the value around community is growing. and it's shifting because, you know, we are one of, I mean, our generations are the first generations to really have the ability to live anywhere. You know, young people are moving away from their homes. You know, the internet has opened up the world to people. And so people tend to not live in their same town anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for me, what I've done, because I don't have any family that lives around me, is that I've built a great community. The woman who wrote the foreword to my book is actually not a mother. She's one of my dearest friends, and she doesn't have children, and she's in her 60s. She never had children. And why I had her write the foreword to my book was because my first piece of parenting, quote, advice was to hang on to your community. Hang on to your friends, even the ones that don't have kids, because the true ones that don't have kids will still honor and love and respect you and give you great guidance anyway. And so, you know, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, we're either A, single moms, or we're moms that we live in different states in our families. And we focus more on building community as not necessarily a replacement. I mean, I suppose you could say replacement, but as a sort of, you know, we know we need that, you know, mommy groups, play groups, different sets of friends. I mean, the one thing I always find is amusing is you can't, as your kids get older, you don't get to pick their friends, nor do you get to pick their friends' parents, you know, so kind of harbor some fantasy that they're going to really, you know, be cool. And what I try to do, like in my own kids, is that my house is the house every weekend when I, you know, when my kids are with me on the weekends, I have a gathering of all my kids' friends and their parents, and we all just build community around there. And I think that's extremely important. You know, we're, as a human, one of our main traits is community. So, you know, to be isolated is tough anyway.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. And yeah, when I read the question, you know, I looked at it and I said, I don't know that family values have gone away so much that they need to reemerge. I think that they just need to maybe be redefined.
Evolving is the word.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So now in regards to the book, you know, obviously, you know, we've talked about the fact that it's got this very unique title, and it would seem like it was geared more towards moms. But my question is, you know, what feedback have you gotten from the dads that have read the book?
You know, I think that any of the stories that we talk about with moms, it can be complete. You can take the word mom out and put dad in. You know, we wrote the book because it's written by me, a woman named Debbie Spector Weissman, and then several other moms contribute chapters on how to deal with family and in-laws and all sorts of different types of topics. But I think that the feedback that I've gotten so far from many of the men that have read it has just been, wow, I can totally relate to this book. I mean, I laughed out loud. You know, I mean, it you can just take out the word mom and put dad.
Yeah, and I agree with that point, and I had the same feeling, and I'm one of those dads that, in fact, when the kids were little, I was a room dad, and when the first one went into kindergarten, I signed one of the documents, and the document said room mom, and I didn't care what it said. I just signed it saying I would sign up to come in and to help. And the next week when the parents were all brought in, the teacher made a big deal and said, you know, we're now going to change the forms. And the forms will now say room parent because we have a dad, you know. And I was like, no, I wasn't trying to make a statement. I wasn't trying to do anything. But just as you said, you can kind of interchange it. And if you're a parent, you just think, well, yeah, that kind of fits for me too.
And, you know, I think it's really cool. Like one of my son's best friends, dad, is well, he's, the children are now a little older, but at the time he was a stay-at-home dad, and it was funny because when he told me that, I didn't react, and he even said to me, he's like, wow, you're one of the first people. He goes, it must be getting normal because you're it's finally a time when people aren't reacting when I say I'm a stay-at-home dad. I'm like, no, it must be. You know, that's that part we were just talking about a moment ago about evolving, and, you know, an evolution. Mm-hmm. You know, it's these are the kinds of things that are becoming really normal.
Yeah, one of the stories from when I was a room dad that touched my heart was as I was doing a group, and the teacher would give me like five kids at a time, and we would be a reading group or something, and we went outside because it was a beautiful day, and the one boy sitting next to me said, wow,
I wish my dad was retired like you. And I paused for a minute. And I'm like, I'm not retired, but thank you. What, you know? And he said, well, he goes, I just think that it's so great for, and he referred to my son, that you're able to be here. And I just wish that, that my dad could as well. And I said, well, maybe there'll be a time in which he can. He said, no, he said, I don't see him. He said, he leaves for work before I get up, and he doesn't get home until about the time that I have to go to bed. So he's working from, 6 in the morning until 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And it was just so, it touched my heart so much that this boy, all he really wanted was, he wanted more time with his dad. So.
Right. Well, and I think that what's fun about my house is I have two film students that live with me. And I mentor them. And nowadays, my kids will come home and their first question is, where's Kay? Or where's Michelle? Or what are they? They're almost part of the family now. And what I think is cool is that they get this opportunity to have an experience with people outside of their family, and then they're expanding what it means to be family, because the two girls that live with me now, they've lived with me for months, and they're like their family, and they are like, they're like big sisters. I always say aunties, they always want to say big sisters, but, and it's fascinating. I volunteer, it's really windy where I am right now, but I volunteer at my kids' school, and I get the same thing a lot from the kids. It's like, gee, I wish my mom or dad could come. It's a tough time. I think one of the other questions was that, new moms today have it harder. I don't say harder, I say different. We live in a world where most parents have to work. Most parents have to drop their kids off at school and don't pick them up until 4 o'clock, and they stay in after school. And it's hard, and that's one of the reasons why, for me, I love being kind of like the community mom. I know all the kids in my kids' classrooms, that, I know their parents, I talk to them, I try to be present and around every one of them.
Yeah, you and me both. We have another listener question that has come in, and this one reads, my grandson just turned 1 year old last month, and my daughter is having a very difficult time raising a child, being a wife, maintaining a career, and trying to find time for her closest friends and her interest in painting. And then in quotes, it says, there are just not enough hours in the day. She keeps telling me she feels guilty that she wants a more balanced life. I loved your last book, and the title of this one is incredible. I am excited about buying this one and passing it on to my daughter. Any other advice you would give her?
Yes, I have a big, to me, the concept of finding balance is a sacred cow. My last book is called Tipping Sacred Cows. Okay, listen, I have lots of interests. I have lots of friends. I have two children. And I'm always doing something. And people oftentimes say to me, oh, how do you find balance? And I was asked actually a while ago to write an article about finding balance. And I really had to think about that for a second, because when I keep telling myself I have to find something, it means I don't have it, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing about our lives is that for the most part, we're in complete control of our lives. Even if you can say to me, oh, well, I have to work because I have to make money, blah, blah, blah. All that is true if that's your perspective of it. So my perspective is different. I look at my life and go, it's perfectly in balance because I've created it that way. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm feeling overwhelmed, then I have to step back and ask myself, what are my values? What is it that I truly value and desire in my life? And then I don't say money and those kinds of words, but I use I go back to those funny things called feelings. What is the feeling that I desire in my life? And how can I create my life so that it has that experience? And sometimes that means that, I have to maybe not, like yesterday is a perfect example. It was a rainy day. I got to sleep in till 10 o'clock, which by the way is shocking because I never get to do that. So I slept until 10 o'clock. And then, you know, played with my son, had to go to the grocery store, had some work on a proposal I had to do. And I had promised my daughter that we would begin sewing this dress that she wants to make for her doll. And I wanted to have a bath. Right. And so as the day progressed and I got to sleep until 10 o'clock, I got up and I made pancakes and all this great stuff. And I began to do all the things that I needed to do during the day. And I stopped for a second because it came to that moment where I had to make a choice. Like, okay, it's like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I'm either going to have time to have a bath or I'm going to have time to sew with my daughter. Which one do I choose? And for me, there wasn't any guilt. I just looked at both of those opportunities and said, well, which one is going to give me the feeling that I truly desire right now? Oh, sewing with my daughter. Let's do that. And, you know, I'll have a bath another time. And there was no regret. There was no guilt. It was just a realization that in this moment, this is what's serving me better. Moms have to remember, and we talk about this in the book, that you have to take care of, you have to check in with you first. And you know what? It's totally okay. Your kid will survive if you leave them with a babysitter. It's actually better for your kids if you can leave them with the babysitter because you're going to be happier. You have to lose the mommy guilt that like, oh my God, if I don't spend every living waking moment looking and cooing at my beautiful baby, they're going to hate me for the rest of their life. You'll never survive. You know, for me yesterday afternoon, if I had turned around to my daughter and said, you know what, Alora, listen, I'm aware that I told you that we were going to do this, but you know what I really need for myself right now is half an hour in the bath. I need a break. And I communicated that to her because of the way in which I'm consistently present for my kids. They get played with a lot. I'm around that I can set up a relationship where I can say, I love you, you're safe, I'm going to do this because it's for myself, and not feel guilt about it, not feel guilty like, oh, I've blown her off. Even if she storms out of the room going, but you promise, I know in my own mind, you know, I'm pretty good about all this stuff. She'll survive. It's that short-term, long-term thing that we talked about before. In the short term, she might be annoyed with me that I didn't go sit with her for an hour right then and there. But in the long term, I'm going to be happier, and she'll still get what she needs, and everyone's going to be fine, you know?
Absolutely. Oh, it makes perfect sense. And again, I love the level of communication that you've established with them. And, you know, I'm looking at the time, and we are almost out of time. This has been wonderful. I have a question that I'd like to end with, and that is, if you could only leave your children three truths in life, what would they be?
If I could only leave my children three truths, it would be, let me think about this. So I think the first one would be trust your heart. Everything is going to be okay. And it's not as bad as you think it is.
I love it. And I think everybody out there, you need to trust your heart. And if you get the opportunity, go to Betsy's website. It is Betsy, BetsyChase.net. There's a lot of information on the site about everything that you're doing. And what is next for you?
Well, I'm in post-production on a feature film called Leap. It's about the coaching industry. People may have heard of it called The Coaching Movie. If they go to, I think it's coachingmovie.com, or if they go to my website, they'll find it and they can see the trailer. It doesn't come out till the end of the year, but so I'm doing that right now, and I'm looking at writing another book, and I'm being a mom, and just kind of, you know, enjoying life. My life motto is, this would be the thing that I leave my kids with all the time: enjoy your life, every minute of it. And that's from Jack Kerouac. And so that's what's next for me always.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much, Betsy. Please, as you get closer to either releasing the movie or the next book, we'd love to have you back on. What a joy it is to have you. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And for everybody out there, please tune in next week when our guest, Dr. Susan Allison, will share with us her new book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven.
Trust me, you're going to want to hear about this. And if you miss or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can check us out and or subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and like us. This is how we can get the word out. This is how we can spread the information given by all of these wonderful guests. So everybody, be good humans and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.